1 Samuel chapter 14 and verses 1 to 6. I'm really looking at this episode here from 1 to 14, but I'll concentrate on 1 to 6 in this short discourse. I remind you, it is a short discourse. Therefore, I'm not going to look at Saul here. Just notice him in passing. I'm concentrating on the life of Jonathan in these short discourses. And of course, as I said several times now, although the fighting here is real with swords, for us, the fighting is spiritual. The weapons of our warfare are not carnal. They are spiritual. Well, we remember the background now. The Philistines are top dog here. They've been annoyed by Jonathan. He's dared to provoke them. And the Philistines have control over the Israelites. Israel is in bondage here. They have no weapons, only two swords in the whole nation. Many have fled. Some have crossed the Jordan and gone away. They've cowered in caves. They even have to go to the Philistines to get their agricultural implements to be sharpened. And that's their only weapons, if they're weapons you can call. If you can call them weapons. But Jonathan has provoked them. And the Philistines have come out, verse 23 of the previous chapter. Now a detachment of the Philistines had gone out to the pass at Michmash. It seems to me that they're threatening an onslaught, an attack here. Now, I pass over Saul. What did Saul do? Nothing. Verse 2, Saul was sitting, staying on the outskirts of Gibeah under a pomegranate tree in Migron. With him were about 600 men, among whom was Abijah and so on. He had these 600 men with him under the pomegranate tree, playing at being a king, liking the trappings of being a king, but Israel's in utter degradation and shame here, and nothing is going on. He's not lived up to his former promise. I mean, Jabesh Gilead, he had accomplished much for Israel there. But now, what is he doing? Nothing. But this discourse today, I want to speak on Jonathan. And the point I want to make about Jonathan in this discourse is this. I want to ask the question, what did he do? And the emphasis upon the doing. Jonathan is a young man, maybe 20, just a bit over. Now, what did he think? Well, we have some idea. What did he plan? What did he talk about? Well, we have some idea about that. Was he content to sit alongside his father as number two, you know, being looked up to, carrying a sword and swaggering about, sit around under the pomegranate tree? No. What did he do? That's the question. One version has verse 14, chapter 14 opening. Now it happened. Well, it did happen, that's right. But it didn't happen just like that. It happened because Jonathan made it happen. There wasn't chance. He acted. Yes, he thought, but he acted. Yes, he said. Yes, but he did. He did. And what he did was this. He formed a committee. No, he didn't. He formed a little body of men to discuss it, but no, he didn't. He went to his father and asked his opinion. No, he didn't want a bucket of cold water. He didn't want apathy. He wasn't in for committees. He was going to go alone. Now, I know what I'm saying in this discourse is quite dangerous. And, of course, there is value in taking advice and counsel. I know all that, but I believe discourses, sermons, should be biased according to the text we're in. And the text here for me today is this. Jonathan did something. And he didn't stand around waiting for others to come. He stood alone. I see the same spirit with Paul in Galatians 1 and 2. He took on Barnabas and Peter in public. Paul was that kind of man. He would take risks. And Jonathan is the same ilk. Come, he said. Let's go over. Now, let's talk about it. Let's go. Let's do something, he said to his young armor bearer. He didn't go to form a committee, I say. He didn't discuss it. He went. We need today, we need men and women of action for Christ. There's plenty of discussion. We have our conferences. We can write our books. We can draw up our reports and make our proposals. Do you pray, my brother? Do you pray, my sister? Of course you do. That's excellent. I'm not deriding it. Do you plan? Do you draw up your budgets? Do you think about it? Discuss it? Hope? Confer over it? Excellent, excellent. But will nothing be done? Now, I'm not making that up. That's precisely what Carey said to the particular Baptist brothers he was with in Northampton. They used to hold their conferences every year, and there were Fuller produced his book on the gospel worthy of all acceptation. There had been sermons, break up, the road to Zion, get the rocks out of the way, get the impediments out of the way. And these men, they were great and good men, they knew that something had to be done. The gospel had to be taken out into all the world. And they knew it. Though they were a handful of poor preachers in the Northampton area in the United Kingdom, they knew they had to go. And so it would go on, they'd have another annual sermon, and they'd be stirred up again and encouraged, and they sat in the back room of the house, and this is what Carey said to the brothers, My brothers, sirs, he said, will nothing be done? You see, we're talking about it, but will nothing be done? We're preaching about it, but will nothing be done? And so Jonathan is of that ilk. We're going to do something, he says. I'm going to do something. What are you going to do, Jonathan? Verse 1, I'm going to go over to the Philistine garrison. What? You must be mad. You and your servant go to the garrison. You've got to climb this cliff, this sharp cliff. Verse 4 would tell us that the outpost was on a crag. You've got to go up. He had to crawl up on his hands and knees. Really? And you'll take these people on? You'll provoke them? The sheer audacity of it. The effrontery of the man. You'll carry the fight to them? Can you imagine people in Kerry's day? You'll go to India. You'll travel all that distance. It's not flying out in a jumbo jet. To weeks and weeks to sail out to India. The Moravians before that had gone to Greenland. Would they ever go to Greenland for? To take the gospel to Greenland? What? You'll go to Greenland to take the gospel? Yes, we will go. The pilgrims, the Mayflower people, they went to America. And one of the reasons, some of them went, was that they might take the gospel into the Americas. That we might be stepping stones as unto others. We might be pioneers. We might take the gospel to that continent. Brainard and Eliot went to the Indians. These men were men of risk and audacity. Those brothers who went into the Ecuador Indians, they lost their lives. They risked all, though. They didn't write books about it. They got on with it and did it. And I challenge myself, and I challenge you, brother, and I challenge you, sister. Is there anything we can do to confront the cultures, to take Christ to this pagan world, to take Christ to the evolutionists, the pagans, the Romanists, the Islamic peoples? What can we do? How can we take the gospel out? What does fall to our hands? Years ago, when I was a young man, that was a long time ago now, and I was starting out in gardening, and I was a very serious gardener for much of my life, I was talking to an old believer, an old gentleman who's now in glory. And this man and I were talking, and we were disagreeing about a certain scheme and a plan. And I must have said something along the lines, well, the books say this. And this dear old man, he was a very dry, humorous man. And this is what he said to me. He said, books are written about gardening, he said, by people who can't do it. Now, that's not strictly true. He was cynical. But there is an element of truth in it. It is said that those who do. Those who can't, teach. Those who can't do it, teach. Now, that's cynical, of course. But the truth is, there's plenty of teaching about it, plenty of books about gardening. It's the doing it. In my time now, gardening has become a tremendous television hobby, and people love watching it being done. It's the doing of it. It's the doing of it. It's getting your hands dirty, getting your hands into the soil, and bending your back and doing it. Jonathan is a man of action. Will I make trouble, Jonathan? I know. I'm going to risk it. He didn't tell his father. As I say, he didn't want a bucket of cold water and apathy. I'm not going to water this down. Like I say again, I know there's a risk in what I'm saying here. But we want today men and women, believers, who will think out of the institutional box. We've always done it this way. We've always walked down this lane in this way, in this rut. No, let's think biblically. Let's think spiritually, and let's think how we can take the gospel to the pagans. As I say, there's difficulty here, there's the sharpness of the climb, it's going to be very uncomfortable, very risky, but he's going to go. So that's my discourse today. It says to me, will I go on, falling flat on my face if it has to be? Will I risk for Jesus? Will I spend the 2 mites I have? Will I get the 2 loaves, 5 loaves and 2 fishes? Will I do what I can? Will I be like David? Will I use the pebbles, or will I do what David didn't do? He selected the pebbles and he kept them in his bag and that was all. No. I'll have a go, he said. And he did, and he had confidence, and God blessed him. Paul, we last read of him in Acts 28 in Rome. Rome is all-conquering. But look at it today. Paul's doctrine is standing. Where's the Roman Empire today? The gospel is mighty through God. Let us risk with it, brother. Let us not save our seed. Let us sow it. We won't get any crop unless we sow the seed. It has to die first. We need men and women, brothers and sisters of Jonathan's ilk. What can we do for Jesus today? What risk will we take for him? What will we do for the sake of the Lord?